I would like to caution listeners that the upcoming interview touches upon various topics that some may find upsetting. In an effort to tell the real story of what's now happening in Myanmar, we encourage our guests to share as they feel comfortable doing, affirming that this platform is one that could bear the weight of their story. As traumatic as the events have obviously been for our guest, they can affect even those of us listening from a distance as well. I'll be honest, every member of our team has shed a tear at some point or another in the process of bringing these interviews to you. And similarly, you might find yourself affected by this story. If you feel that some of this content may be upsetting in what follows, maybe consider listening in stages or whatever works for you. But please listen. Please bear witness to what this guest has to say. Pandora, thank you for joining us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Hello, nice to meet you. I'm Pandora. Thanks for inviting me to this podcast. Yes. before the military coup, I was in Yangon, but after the COVID, I went back to the hometown. In 2021, the military took over defer to power, and I was leading in the town to protest as a street protest like this, and I was leading the younger generation and the students. That's why I was danger in my town. That's why I need to flee to the borderline and near Lake Kiko. And I was stayed in there for 2 months. I joined the PDF training in September 2021. Yes.
So you became a protest leader in your home region of Bago, and that put you in danger. So you had to flee because you were simply leading these nonviolent protest movements against the military regime. You were targeted as a leader of that nonviolent resistance. Before the 2021 coup, were you involved politically? Were you aware politically?
No, I've never been in political region yet. I was in Togai. Yes, I traveled around inside the Myanmar as a listener Togai, yes.
Oh my gosh. And what was your awareness about the political situation in and kind of the history of conflict and ethnics and such in your country? What awareness did you have before the coup?
Yes, I have aware of it because Bago is situated near the Kayan region. That's why I heard about the conflict between Kayan ethnic and Myanmar military. Yeah.
But politically, you were not so interested?
Yes, I'm not interested in politics yet. Right. That's my weak point. Yes. After the coup had been, I thought we learn a very weak education system. That's why I went to... I don't want to stay to my younger generation to learn that kind of education again. That's why I joined to the protest, and I stayed in political region until now.
And so you started by joining protests, but very soon you became a leader.
Our town is very small. I can unite the student in my town. And that's very easy because the town is very small. And we discussed how to protest in our town. And they also went to join me with me. That's why I was leading there.
But you had no history of this kind of activity.
No, never.
Yeah. Did you realize the danger that you were putting yourself in and the risk that you were taking?
First of all, I really don't know about the danger. Yes.
I remember in those early days, I also had friends that suddenly became political that weren't before. And there was also a sense they had that that there was so much momentum. There was so much energy that they're going to win in a matter of weeks. There was a feeling that we're there's so much of us and our energy is so strong that we're going to show them they can't take over. So
yes, of that, course. I have that kind of energy. We can win at that situation. That's why we put the energy, all our energy to the protest, and like until now, I have stayed energy for the revolution. I have the kind of energy of 3 months. Yeah, I was living in the town. That's why until now, I have the kind of energy still now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's why I'm not leaving to the other countries. That's why I stayed in Mesa, and my partner stayed inside. I always support them, and I always support to my colleagues. Yeah.
Yeah, but in that early time after 2021, did you think that this was going to be 5 years still happening, or did you think just a few weeks and it will be over?
I think just a few weeks or a few months, I think.
In 2021?
Yes, of course, at that day. After I was leading in my town, some of my colleagues are arrested. My friends are in danger, so I was also in danger. My family did not want to lead the protest. They want to quit me. You are a girl. You don't need to protest. You can control the military coup. So stay home quietly. So I couldn't stay inside. That kind of, I have, empathy to the other CDMRs or some other colleges. They are staying on the road, and we can see on the Facebook and in Yangon or in Mandalay, some of the younger people are in danger, and they were killed by military, so I couldn't stay inside. Yes.
Yeah. So your parents wanted you to stay safe inside, stop the revolution.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. As a girl in a more traditional society.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what did you do?
So I decided, if I will stay in my hometown, I couldn't do anything that I want to do in the revolution. That's why I decided to flee to the borderline, where I can free, ankle free, do what I want to do in the revolution.
Was that a hard decision?
Yes, that was a hard decision, because they told me in the jungle, you have no good food or coconut water or something like that. They have no curry. And also no telephone to use and no internet connection, they told me. It was a hard time, but I decided because I don't want to stay inside as a silent. Yeah.
Have you seen your family since?
Yes. After I leave from my house, I've never been there, and we haven't seen yet.
That must be hard.
Yes, almost four or five. Yes.
Yeah. Are you able to write them or call them?
Yes, sometimes I can write them. Because now the people from the military side, they always test to my home. That's yeah. why they don't want to contact me frequently.
So for the safety of your family, you can't be in contact very often.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, right. So then you arrive in the jungle. You've set the scene. In the jungle, there are hard living conditions, not very good food, no phone connectivity, very little water, and you're about to undergo training. So this is, you've never been in a situation like this before. I think most of our listeners have never been in a situation like this. So talk about what that first week and month was like.
Yeah, when I was in the jungle in the first week, I have chance to meet with the other young people like me. I have so much energy. Oh, we can meet finally. We have the same energy and the same target. We all went to fight back to the military government. We have same energy. That was wonderful. I was happy that time, yes.
How many people were in your group?
The first play, there are 30 people, yes. Only 30 people is that we have to live in a group. Some people as in one group, 15 or 30 people can stay together. The first 3 months, I was stayed in the Brigade 7, in Kayan State. And after 3 months, I moved to the Brigade 6 to attend the training.
Was it difficult to adjust to those challenging conditions? Was that a difficult process?
Yes. First time. I was living from my hometown in May. It was in summertime. It's very okay. We can walk on the ground. It's no put it. In the rainy season, we live in the tent. In the jungle, the rainy was heavy. So the tent is not very good condition. That was a very hard time. And when we went to go to bed, we need to take a shower in the river or like a pool. Yes, it was a hard time. Most of the time, we have to eat bean curry and also noodle. Yeah. Some of my friends from Yangon, they sent me the food.
Oh, they could. Yeah. So you could have deliveries.
Yes. It's the time. There was a transportation from Yangon to Miaodi. It's very good condition, so we can take the food. After I was staying in the Brigade 7. I couldn't attend to the training, but I want to attend training, so I need to ask to the others. So where could I attend the training and the real training? So you know, yeah. That's why I moved to the Brigade 6 and I attend the training in September 2021. It was the training from the NUT government. There were almost 200 or more than 200 people from all over the Myanmar, but most of them are from Irrawaddy region. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are 200 men, but only 13 women join the the training. Yeah, I was one of them.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
How was the experience of being a woman in that environment?
In the training, there was a family. It's a family tie. It was a family tie. Most of the others, people, will take care of us as their sisters or a younger sister or older sister. Yeah, it was a family tie.
So you felt comfortable. Did you face much discrimination?
Yes. As a woman in our country, as a country or as a religion, and they are men, all of men talk that, think that, women are weaker than men. And also they have, do you know, pole? Yes, they have pole and they have more energy, they have more stronger, they are more stronger than women, and also they could do wherever they want, and they have power, and they can control all they want. Yeah, that's why when I was joined to the front line, they really don't trust me as a woman. They thought that I couldn't do in the front line as other men. Yes.
So you're talking about power, and you're talking about two kinds of power, just to make sure our listeners are understanding. You're speaking about one, the physical body, and that men often have stronger bodies, which is biological. But you're also talking about pun, which is a spiritual power. So this is beyond the physical body. There's also a Buddhist belief that men have more spiritual power. And so this is also a form of discrimination, that your spiritual power is not as strong as a woman.
Yes, they have that kind of discrimination in the family, in the school, and also in the front line. They have that kind of belief. It was a brainwash since we was young, we was children. It was a brainwash by the military or by the religion or by the country. They don't want to, when we have to take shower, they split the space. In the river, we have to take shower in the lower side. They will move.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah. So that the water you were using to shower
it's dirty.
It's like you can't mix the men and male and female clothing when you're doing laundry.
Of course. Yeah.
Same as that.
Yes. But in the lower side, there was daddy already, so we don't want to take shower this place. So we will take this place. So we fight. Yeah.
Different place.
The same place. When we are taking the shower, they don't come to this place. So I put the line with them. I need to discuss so many times.
I've heard different things from those that are on the front lines of the revolution. I have heard stories from some saying that these traditional beliefs, they have no place in the revolution. And I've heard from a lot of men saying, we don't believe in this, we don't want this. And I've heard those stories. And I've also heard the stories that you're saying of signs that that these discriminatory beliefs, and sometimes even harassment and assault, that these things are happening in the revolution. And so what's your thought as to how common this is? And also, we don't want to say that everyone is the same everywhere. I'm sure that you encountered some men and commanders and peers that thought one way and some people that thought another. So can you give us a bit more description of this?
Some men couldn't believe as I can do. They don't believe me, but some of my friends, we are in the same trainee. They know how good I, how I could do. So they believe me and they trust me. So they brought me to the front line. You can do it. I have so much energy when they put me in the front line. So I was stay in front line for 2 years with their encouragement. Yes.
Yeah. So you had men who believed in you and promoted you.
Yes, of course. Yeah, some didn't believe, but some believed me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then let's go back to your training, because you mentioned that you were able to show your ability during the training.
Oh, yes. In September, they were still in the rainy season. It was a hard time for all the people from the inside of Myanmar, because most of us have never that kind of experience before. So we have hard time and we have not got food. We have to eat every day, like instant noodle and also bean. Some rarely, once in 2 weeks, we can eat meat. And sometimes, this is far from the town, you know. If we order the snack or something, coffee or cigarette, it takes too long to get there. That's why, oh, it's okay, we don't need to wait. We should eat the food because we have we need to get nutrition to attend the training, so we try to eat. And that was in after 2 weeks, that was in normal eating. Yes, that's why. And first time in the training, our trainee teacher, he's from CDMR, from the police, SWAT maybe. He's the best I have ever seen. Yeah. He always treat women very well, and he always give the energy. You can do it. You have to believe to yourself. You can do it. That's why we caught very well in the training. Some other guests, all of other guests got through as the other men got through. Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, we carry the tick and yeah, and we run, we shoot, all are the same in the camp. That was the details. Yeah, I think the main one is the training detail is he has go blind.
Yeah, he believes in you.
Yeah, he believed that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What did you do in the training?
First time we have normal training for 1 man. After that time, the teachers told us, the trainer told us, you have to choose a subject and commando or sniper or and also mining. And I choose sniper. So we have to examine how we shoot. And we, so me and other guests got joined to the sniper training after 1 month. So that time we have had time for 2 months. Yeah.
That's incredible. And I want to go back to the beginnings of your story and highlight for listeners. I mean, you're a, before this, you were a tour guide working, living in the city, living a more comfortable life. You have no background in anything like this at all. You probably have never seen a gun before in your life, let alone touched it. And you're now in the jungle undergoing intensive military training and now learning how to be a sniper and going against one of the fiercest militaries in the region. So was there ever a time that as you were going through this, you had self-doubt or you thought, what am I doing here? I can't do this. Or what about this comfortable life I left behind? Did you ever have these kind of self-doubts in your decision or your ability, or were you really just motivated, continued by the revolution?
Sometimes I have that kind of feeling. I can't do anymore. I have no future in the jungle. That kind of feeling I was.
Yeah.
When I was using Facebook, I got to see some of my friends growing well in the present time. They have more better future they have, but I was top in 2021 and I joined to the camp. That's why at the time I feel sad sometime.
Really?
Yeah. And also I couldn't contact to my family. I was feeling not really good. That I at the time, I don't want, I went to leave to the camp.
Mm-hmm.
But it's free. I have more energy in the revolution. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there's so much courage hearing about this. And I think for many of our listeners, we think, well, what would we do in a similar situation? If things got really bad in our homes, would we have the ability to make that decision to put ourselves in a place outside of comfort, in a zone of danger, and doing something very difficult that we've never done before, and doing it for a sustained time, and hearing this choice that you made and the choice that you continue doing when, you know, you're coming from a place of privilege. You could have listened to your parents and said, okay, I led some protests for a while. I'm going to stay home, going to wait for things to pick back up and look at what I can do for work. And you could have lived that life in safety. And yet you chose to go to a place of great danger and great discomfort to be able to support these freedoms and the revolution for your country. So, you know, you and there's many like you that made that decision. We're so privileged to get a chance to speak to you, to hear from someone who made this decision and understand what went into this decision and what process their life developed in. Because it's you and people like you that are sustaining and keeping this revolution going. But these are not easy choices that you made, and you were not in very comfortable situations as you were doing it.
Yeah, it was a hard decision. When I was in the jungle, and also I was leaving from the jungle, I moved to the Mesa. I have nothing to do. I have no future. What could I do? I was feeling, I have hopeless, yes, that it was a sad time. Some of my friends helped me to develop myself in the current situation. You can do it. They believe me. And yes, some of my friends believe me. Yeah, that's why I God, stay here.
Yeah. And, you know, as you were going through this training, outside observers, many in the international community, they didn't give you a chance. Not you specifically, but the general resistance movement, they didn't think you had a chance. They thought that there's no way that these young people and these ethnics, there's no way that they can resist the military. And we've seen what's happened the last few years. So that belief that you had in yourself and that your comrades had in each other to support it, you know, you have those actions have proved so many people wrong.
Yes, but in my thoughts, we don't have to wait international help or other support. Our energy, the young people, yeah. We can do that. That our beliefs. Until now, right. I think. Until now, my boyfriend had that kind of energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Who cares what they think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to go forward. We have to fight to win. We believe until now, we could win.
Okay, so let's pick back on your story. You have you've gone through a month of basic training and you now have a choice of which direction you want to go in, which specialty, and you choose sniper. Why did you choose sniper? And tell us then about your experience in learning how to be a sniper.
Yes. When I went to be a sniper, I think I'm going to join to the commando or mining. I'm so afraid of mining, so I'm going to touch the mining accessory. And also, the commando is more like tired than sniper. And also, I couldn't face to the enemy close to the I couldn't face. That's why I chose to the sniper. We can stay away from the, in the enemies. That's why I chose.
Yeah. And so you chose to be a sniper. As we mentioned, you've never touched a gun before. I don't know if you've ever seen a gun before this. What was the experience like when you had the physical hardware of a gun in front of you? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. Before the sniper training, we have to practice how to shoot and how to manage the gun. And we have to shoot and the four or... Yes, M4 and M16, like this. Yeah, I forgot the name of the gun. Yes, that time we caught shoot to the point, to the target. Yeah, so after the sniper training, we have no at the time in 2021 we have no sniper gun. We have only M4. With microscope and
telescope.
Yes, only M4. Mm-hmm. It's great. It was great at the time. That's why we couldn't practice with a sniper gun in the training. It's nine millimeter gun. It was handy gun, I think. Yeah. But it was very soft, I think so. And I got shoot to the target very first time. I don't know why, but I could do that.
So you had a talent from the start.
Maybe I have talent.
And how did it feel to actually hold and shoot a gun for the first time?
When I shoot to the target is the border, so we can see the target clearly. Before I touch the gun, I'm shaking.
Really?
Yes, of course. I'm shaking.
Wow.
I couldn't touch the gun. But my gun was arrived. I need to shoot. That was happened. I shoot.
That's incredible. So before you ever touch a gun, you're shaking, waiting for your turn. You're physically shaking your body.
Yes.
And then you pick up the gun and you hit the target.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Beside me, yeah, there was trainers. They told us how to shoot and they told me how to manage the gun, how to put the hand on the gun. Yes. That's why. With their helps, I got to. If not, I couldn't do without their helps.
So then your first experience is 9mm. You then go to M4 and M16. How were your experiences different as you started to use different weapons?
Yes, M4 is stronger than 9mm. Before we shoot the M4 gun, we have so much training to be stronger physically. We have so much training. If we get enough stronger after 1 month, we could shoot the N4. That was our hands and our fingers are stronger than before. That's why 9mm is softer, but we could shoot N4 very well.
So because these are more powerful weapons, you're saying that the trainers told you needed to be more physically strong to be able to handle them?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So how did you become more physically strong?
They have physical training also during the whole day. That's why.
Right. And then what was your experience as you started to use the M4 and M16?
Yeah.
How did you feel with that? How was that different?
It's heavy. Maybe it was 5 pounds or... Yeah, we have to run around the camp when we are carrying the M4 gun. So many times we have to run and we have to push up, put the gun from the back of ours. We have to push it, and also they train us to be friendly and not to be afraid of gun. They train with. That's why the greatness of our trainers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were there other female snipers?
Yes, only me and other guests. Only two. We could join the sniper training, but she couldn't join to the front line.
Are you, if you're able to say, was this the KNU that was training you at this point, or was it still PDFs?
PDFs.
So this is NUG PDFs training.
Yeah, you. NUG PDF training. The trainer also from the NUG. Only one KNU soldier train. Yeah, only one. And most trainers are from NUG.
I see, right. So it was a four-month training.
Yes, 4 months.
And then what, you say that you couldn't train properly with a gun with a scope because that wasn't available yet. But eventually, I assume, during that four-month period, the proper weapon was acquired and you were able to use a gun with a scope and do proper sniper training. Is that right?
Yeah. But after three-month training... we have to go to the another place to train as a sniper. The leader give us the 0.308 a sniper gun to practice. From the first training, 12 people could join the special sniper training. Yeah, that time we could practice with 308 sniper gun.
So you had to qualify to go to the training.
Yes.
Yeah, and your marksmanship was good enough to qualify.
Yes. And also, our sniper trainer also recommend me to join this training.
I see.
Yeah.
Right.
They could see how good I do and how I have that kind of energy. That's why he recommend to join.
Why do you think you were so good at that?
At the time, I feel like this. I'm so good at this.
Why though? Why? You've never done this before. Why do you think you were so good?
When I was in the Sweden, I was an outstanding student in the class, and also I joined to the Torukai. When I was in Torukai, I could do well. That's why I always to be outstanding everywhere I go. That's why I want to be the best. And I believe myself. That's why I could do what I want to do. I always believe until now.
I see. So then when you start taking this sniper training with this advanced sniper training with 12 participants, what was that like?
Oh, at the time, we have to move another place. And also, I was the only one woman in the group. At the time, I have a partner, and he always killed me, and he protected me from the sexual harassment. I have no that kind of experience in the jungle. I think I have my boyfriend, and... He also sniper. In the sniper, we have a shooter and spotter. He was a shooter, and I was a sporter, and in the special training, we have to choose the partner. At the time, I choose him.
How long had you been dating?
Oh, 4 years. No. Yeah, we met in the sniper training.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Tell me about how this relationship works. And I don't mean the romantic relationship. I mean the relationship between a spotter and a sniper. Why do you need to have two people? And what are those two different roles actually doing?
As a sniper couple, we have a shooter and spotter. Shooter have to shoot to the target. Mm-hmm. Spotter have to calculate the wind speed and also how far with the target. And the spotter have to calculate so much in the meantime. So, as a sniper, we need two people to win the target, I think.
So, as a spotter, you're not actually shooting, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You're but you're having to do so much mental work of trying to figure out how the target is going to be hit.
Yeah.
About how long does that take to give an idea? So let's imagine you see a target and you have to do all these calculations and the target isn't just waiting there, just sitting in one place. How long does it usually take for that process to calculate everything from the time that you see him to the time that the shooter can pull the trigger?
Sometimes we have time to calculate carefully, but sometimes we have enough time to calculate. At the time, we have to guess the target and the wind speed. We need our brain. We decide how to shoot at the time. Mm.
If you can have all the time that you need, how many minutes would be the minimum that you would like to have to calculate everything?
Almost 10 minutes we need to calculate.
Uh-huh. So 10 minutes is the ideal, that if you have 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 or 15 minutes. 10 or 15 is the ideal minute.
Right. But then how do I guess sometimes you would have someone stationary that wasn't moving, but many times targets aren't doing that. They're walking from this place to that place, even moving the head slightly. I mean, you saw with Trump when Trump there was an assassin when he was running for president, and they showed that Trump just happened to move his head a certain fraction and that saved him from the bullet going past. So when you're doing all these calculations, and the wind is also not stable, the wind is changing. So, how do you make these calculations when everything is moving constantly?
Yes. We have a principle not to shoot more than 16 miles per hour. If the wind speed, we couldn't shoot the target. Mm-hmm. So we have to wait the wind to be slow. When the target is moving, we have to wait so much time when he will stop. And if he has no idea to stop, we calculate how could we shoot at that time.
So were there times that you had to go somewhere and wait for like an hour or two?
Sometimes one day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Mm. So sometimes a week.
Wow.
We have to stay there in the hill or something. The place where we could see the target clearly. We have to sleep at the place. And from the people on our side, we can shoot whoever we see, because we have to lose their people. That's why we got to choose whoever we see. We have when we saw the target, we have to inform to the leader, operation leader. After he confirmed, we got to shoot.
So there's a chain of command.
Yes.
Yeah, right. How, with the sniper rifles that you were using, how far away could you be?
We shot only 1 kilometer at the time.
So you could be 1 kilometer away?
Yeah, sometime 800 meter. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you had to put yourself sometimes in a place of danger by being that close to the enemy?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. It's based on the operation, where we should live, and which place is the best for us. Yeah, we choose. When I have a trauma
okay.
From the front line, because when I think about the target,
sure.
I couldn't sleep very well at night. Uh-huh. So I saw them in the dream. I couldn't sleep well. Yeah, it was a hard time, and before school, I have a normal life and I have a good life, and after I joined to the military and the training, I feel I was another person. I feel at the time, most of the time in my normal life, I couldn't carry heavy material or something like that. I couldn't and I always chew the food, good food. I always chew. In the training camp, I couldn't chance to choose the food, and I surprised myself. Oh, I got to. And after I leave it from the PDF, now I'm stay in Mesa. As a whole man or as a normal person, that I could feel the normal life before the coup. And when I think about to the BDF life, oh, how good I do, how good I did, I'm feeling like this. Some of my friends asked me, where you go back to the jungle? Oh, I'm feeling nervous. I really don't know. This time, I told them, I'm not sure. I couldn't do that again. I have the kind of energy and I have the kind of power. I couldn't believe myself. I could shoot the sniper again. Yeah. That weird for me. Yeah. When I sleep at night, in the midnight, I always woke up suddenly, and I saw in my brain the people who we were shooting.
Yeah.
That was a nightmare for me.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That must be hard.
Yes. Now in Mesa, I was doing as a volunteer, and I was collecting the DVV case, and we are talking about the DVVs and with other colleagues and with other classmates, we share the story of DVV. They told me. In the Anya, Zagan region, they have when I heard about the case, I couldn't sleep at night.
This gender-based violence you're referring
yes.
to. Yeah.
And I thought my trauma connected each other. And during this current situation I'm currently sleep with and now, my dreams are connected from the jenge and from the keys. They are connected and my brain calculate the dream as a nightmare. In my childhood, my father was have behavior that kind of violence in my house. Before I leave from the house in 2021, from the time who do the adept, my father was terrible. Uh-huh. Until now, I had the news.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So you're saying that your trauma was
from the family,
right?
Yeah.
Right, and that connected to your experience as a sniper. So those two things together.
Yeah.
That's what's made it difficult.
And now, most women in the Mesa, they are trying to help survivors from the GBB. And also, I'm joining the diploma class, Federalism and Peace Study. In the Peace Study, the teachers told us to research about the sexual violence and patriarchy. And within between the classmates, we share the knowledge and the experience they share around their environment. They have that kind of violence. When I heard about them or their story, I have connected the trauma. That's one.
Right. When you talk to other snipers, do they have the work that they're doing as being snipers? Does that give others some sense of trauma as well?
Yes. Some of my friends, they also feel the trauma.
I imagine the experience of being a spotter and having your professional partner and your romantic partner being your boyfriend, that's quite a special experience. And I understood that when you left as spotter, you had said you don't want anyone else to be the spotter for your boyfriend. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I told him, I don't want any spotter beside you. And so he lived as a sniper. He also lived from that kind of service. He was leading the camp. Mm. Yeah. So he shoot until now. He didn't shoot until now.
Really?
Without me.
Really? So
yes.
So he so because you didn't want another spotter for him, then he changed his role.
And also I told him I couldn't believe other people to be spotter beside you. I don't trust. they are not good as me. I told him. So please don't shoot. So they arranged the camp. He arranged the camp and he managed the team.
Wow.
No. Yeah. Wow. Yes. We are different from other couples. In the jenge, most of men have to go to the front line, but their partner and their girlfriend or their wife have to stay in the camp. So they have a little time to meet each other, but we are not. We are always together in the front line and also in the camp. So we have so much time together. In the front line, we also discuss about the enemy, and we also talk about, and also we have same energy in the front line. So we can discuss, carefully, and we can manage the emotion and also the we could discuss very good, you know. We have we have related each other. That's why we could discuss about enemies or other things. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah, our leaders told to the other sniper, you should have girlfriend.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It was our very first operation in the front line. Very first time in the front line. We have to come back from the training camp to join to the front line. We have no experience at all. Mm. At the time, the leader gave us the sniper gun, heavy sniper. We have never done before, that experience with that gun. He told us to stay to the higher place where we can solve or where we can see the enemies. We are not familiar. We were not familiar that place. This is the very first place for us. The two of us, we afraid. We don't know how should we choose the place. We don't know where the enemy is. That was very first time and very uncomfortable moment. We stayed there the whole night and for the other 2 days. At the time, Wendell leave us to the place, the higher place where we could see the enemies. A dog help us at that moment.
Oh yeah. My God.
And he stayed all the night with us. Yeah. It was wonderful.
How do you understand that?
Oh. In our religion, as a Buddha, someone help us someone help us. We believe that.
You must have had, even as difficult as the jungle was, there must have been some magical experiences like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like this.
I have friends who are foreigners, and they became Buddhist monks in Myanmar before the coup. And some of them lived in the forest for long periods of time, like Mahamyang Forest and some of the other around Puyallin and some of the other deep forests. And they would describe the experiences they had in nature with animals, with insects, with invisible beings and supernatural forces. And they would describe the intensity of that experience of being in the jungle just as a monk meditating.
Yeah. Mm. I also thought, oh, it was magic. And also, someone held us as a dog. That was wonderful and a forgettable moment. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So let's move in now to what you've been doing since you left the jungle and you have moved in a different direction, but still very much involved in the revolution. Talk about some of the activities that you're doing now.
Oh, yes. After I leave it from the jungle, when I was in the hometown, I was a seamstress. I have an idea to produce a clothing brand in 2020.
Wow.
In the COVID period.
Uh-huh.
At the time, we have no tourists. That's why I had an idea to produce a local clothing brand. So some of my friends told me, you should restart your brand. So now I'm sewing some clothing as my own brand with local fabric. I order from inside and I'm sewing in Mesa, mm-hmm. and I sell on the online.
What's the name of your brand?
Rise and Shine. Uh-huh. Yeah, Rise and Shine is the sun. And also, it's connected with the revolution. We are, I always feel rise and shine. It's our future. Yeah, that's why I really love the name of my brand.
For listeners that are hearing this overseas in other countries, can they order these products to be delivered internationally?
Of course, I can deliver to all over the country. And when the shop in Chiang Mai, and they have to send my project, and some other people order from the online, I got deliver to the UK, America, and Singapore. They always order from me. I have Instagram also.
Okay, so we will give those links in the show notes, and yeah. we encourage listeners that are inspired by your story and want to support you, that there's a way to have these incredible local fabric handmade delivered to them. That's amazing.
Yes.
Hmm. Do you do all of the sewing, or do you have employees that you've brought in?
I have employee to help me. So I couldn't do all of the clothes without staff. Yeah. So I have staff to help me.
Yeah. Are the staff CDM?
Yes, CDMs.
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
Yeah. Hmm. So we have each other.
Yeah. Yeah. What else are you doing?
And now I'm learning about the politics because I was annoyed about the politics and about the federalism before coup. And I didn't interested about the politics. That's why during this time I have got internet connection. I have chance to learn this subject. That's why I'm attending the diploma class. Do you know Supreme University Myanmar? Yeah, they have so many subjects about the politics. That's why I'm also join the diploma class, Federalism and Peace Study. Mm. At the moment, we could learn on the online. So many classes about the politics are free. So we could learn very easy. The time has come to learn about the politics. Mm. So I'm trying to understand more about the federalism and also about the democracy. Yeah, I'm learning. Yes. After I'm joining in the politics and also to join the PDF, I have chance to know about the ethnic and how the military treat them in the decade. We really don't know about the actual action or grievances of the ethnic groups. We really don't know. And we are privileged in the city towns. We have no idea how they feel from the military, by the military. And also, I really don't know. They could speak and they could learn their ethnic language in the school. I really don't know before the coup. And when I was about that, I'm really shocked. Oh, that was terrible. This is the right to learn to speak their ethnic language. That's why, oh, military. Was terrible. So I feel their feelings, but I have a net empathy to them because I am not theirs. They fed the experience by the military. We fought only 4 or 5 years by the military. They are always target more than 70 years. After the independence. Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah. Some of my friends from the monastery and some more from the Qing, more friends, she told me, you have Burmanization. I really don't know. I have no Burmanization. Burmanization, maybe. Like, they told me about that.
Yeah.
You are privileged. No, I'm not privileged. I couldn't know about that. Please don't blame me. I try to emphasize them. In the meantime, people from the central, like me, we should understand about the ethnic and also the minority. So we should learn about the politics in the meantime. And also, as a citizen, every citizen should know about the politics. If we know about the politics, we could know about the rights as a human right and also children right. We really don't know before the coup. Yeah. It's a different.
Have you been shocked by the things you're learning?
Of course. In the Ganyan state, some women are raped by the military soldier. It's really shock. In front of their husband or their children, it was really shock. Military soldier until now, they are doing like this in some place in, I heard about that. I have one thing. I am very well in sewing technique and how to sew. I know very well because my man also was a seamstress. Mm. She sewn and clothes for us in the childhood. So I have learned. I have chance to see how to sew. So I know very well. And in Mesa, one organization invite me to teach to the GBV survivor how to sew the clothes.
Mm, the gender-based violence survivors.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. They are from the migrant workers. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So I have time to teach them in current now.
So it's been 4.5 years. It's a long time. The resistance has been going on. I'm sure you've changed a lot in that time. How are you feeling?
Yes, I have changed a lot. Before coup, I have I'm not interested in politics and also any rights. I have not interested in. I don't know about the empowerment and also about the GBVs. I really don't know. And after the revolution and during my learning about the politics and also human rights and gender violence, I went to encourage the women to empowerment in my hometown. I have planning to that kind of program. And also I'm practicing yoga and I teach the women in the communities, in one of the community center, I teach them the yoga.
Wow.
So I have idea when I could go back to my town, I will make the program for women empowerment and women solidarity. And also women empowerment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I'm the kind of idea. It's the change from the revolution I have learned.
Yeah.
Well, I love the community now. I love the women community, and also I love the town, and I love the people around me.
In Mesot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have such a bright and positive energy. I'm really struck by that. I know that that there's more there. I know that you still have your own trauma that you're going through, but you have such a lightness and positivity that you're bringing.
Yeah. It was the advantage from the revolution I got.
Really?
Yeah. I could learn and I could understand so many things. Yeah. We could get benefit from the revolution. Yeah. I believe that. Mm. Yeah, I changed a lot by the revolution.
Mm. Well, I don't know who you were before the revolution, because I didn't know you then, but from interacting with you now, you know, there's such a lightness and positivity about you, and I know you're dealing with other things, but it's a...
Yeah. Before the coup, I really don't know about the politics, and also I have no idea to love the people in the cities, and also for the solidarity and empowerment, but I change a lot. I want to promote the women empowerment in my hometown because I was living in a small town. It was village around the small town. There are so many villages. They don't know about the empowerment and also about the women's rights. They really don't know. And also, when as a woman, when her husband beat her, she don't know this was not fair. It's normal, they think. I also think about that. And my family have that kind of experience. My mother told us, this is normal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And also, we have that kind of cultural norms or social norms. One husband and one wife. Oh, it's the best way. They don't want to divorce or something like that. It is not good for the community, for ourselves. Divorce is not good. They believe that.
Right.
Yeah. That's why when I have to go to my hometown, to my native town, or in, I will change the community.
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm. In the early 2025, the revolution was very strong in our side. But now, the military have more stronger than before. We have to move forward quickly by our revolution side. So we need to forward. And they have election also. After the election, if the election is successful, our revolution would not be good anymore, I think. So before the election, we have to move forward.
So you're, as we're talking here, you know, it's just you and I talking, but eventually this is going to be listened to by many people, by people in the diaspora, in the Burmese resistance movement, stakeholders in the conflict, international community, etc. So knowing that you're addressing this wider audience than just me, what do you have some message or something you would like to speak to them?
Yes. As an audience, I want to say thank you for my podcast. And as a young woman from the Myanmar, and I really, before the coup, I really don't know about the politics, but now I have changed a lot, and I have the empathy to the ethnic minority group, and I got free and how they have the experience by the military. So we will need to unite each other, and we discuss each other, and also we need to forward together. So don't be afraid, we will win. So I want to say to the international community, we are moving forward, and we have to fight to the military government. So please support us. We have stay energy to fight the military. Please believe us. Thank you so much.
Our team here at Insight Myanmar is working tirelessly to bring you these stories, but the hard truth is, we're stretched pretty thin. Every episode requires many hours of research, interviews, editing, and production, and with limited resources, the production time often takes longer than we'd like. This prevents us sometimes from working on increased content that covers the pressing crises in the country. But the good news is, your support can help change that. With additional funding, we can expand our team, which would help us to shorten production timelines and increase our content offerings, thus ensuring that voices from Myanmar are heard when they matter most. If you'd like to help us keep up this pace and make an even greater impact, please consider donating at insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Yarananda, Dayananangana, Yaranayada, Yaranambodaba, Yaranam.